There is a story that echoes in the human heart. It is a story about death giving birth to life, a story of hate transformed by love, a story that urges us to swim and not sink. Thousands of years ago, near the coast of Turkey, on the Mediterranean Sea, there was a small community that set sail on a great adventure. They said goodbye to life in the harbor, and they set their sights and sailed on the raging seas. All that remains of their adventure is the captain's log, stitched together in the form of a letter for future travelers. Tonight, are you ready to set sail? My grandma and grandpa loved to throw huge family meals. I'm not talking average ones either. There is enough food for the entire block. There are aunts and uncles and cousins running all around the place. It's absolutely chaotic family time, and there is just tables full, long, big tables of food. And no one can bring anything because grandma and grandpa have to cook everything. And they have figured out these different styles. So sometimes they've done huge barbecues, and sometimes they've done huge potato bars. And other times their favorite is the omelet bar. And they love the omelet bar because everyone can have their own fixings. Fixings from everywhere. And so all the kids and all the cousins go through the line and tell grandpa what they want in their omelet. And grandpa does something else. He prides himself on his Bloody Mary mix as well. And so we're all there and we're all eating and there's laughing and there's joy. And of course, there's a whole lot of teasing going on. You see, because usually these meals happen near a Broncos game. And usually, if you know, my grandma hated the Broncos, despised the Broncos. And it's a very weird thing in Colorado. So that created this dynamic that was actually really fun in the room. Okay, so you've got everyone for the Broncos and grandma's like, they're going to lose, right? And so there's this great family thing happening. And I never thought that I would see what I saw when grandma started to get sick. Now, when grandma started to get sick, things started to change a little bit. The family meals continued, but grandpa started to take over some of the duties. I noticed that grandpa was cutting up more of the vegetables and organizing more of what was going on. I noticed that he started doing the dishes. I noticed even that he would have this sense of passion, almost just extreme control over when grandma was taking her medications and when she was to go to the doctor. And then I even saw him folding clothes. After 40 years of marriage, there was this incredible new thing that was happening in my grandpa that I had not seen before. And so one day, after he had done all the dishes and after he sat down in his recliner, I noticed my grandma just kind of scooch across the floor, and she kind of just leaned back on his long knees. And that apparently after 40 years of marriage is the nonverbal cue that it's time for the massage. And I noticed that as he massaged her, I was just struck. It was like, how do you do that? How do you have a relationship with that after 40 years? How can you actually be like they were with that type of love? And so I decided that this was my time to ask Grandpa. So later that afternoon, he said he had to run an errand. I said, I want to come with. He gets in his big Chevy truck, and I'm sitting there, and I'm just kind of waiting for the right time to ask this question. And then I look at him, and I'm like, I want to know how you did it. I want to know how you loved Grandma and how Grandma loved you for 40 years. And he gets real serious, and he puts his hand back on the steering wheel. Now, you have to know something about my grandpa. He is not an existential philosophical man. He is a blue-collar worker his whole life and a hard worker. So I didn't know what to expect here. And he looks over at me, and he says, whenever I went to the bar, Grandma came with me. And then he stops. And I'm on the edge of my seat like, more, please. You know, and I'm thinking, what is going on? And I look into his eyes, and he has this mistiness in his eyes. And I'm like, whenever he went to the bars, Grandma came with him. And I asked him, I said, what do you mean? You know, tell me more. And he's like, he basically kind of looked at me like, grandson, I will tell you no more. Think on these things, right? And it was one of those moments where I was like, what does he mean? And so I've come to find out that those simple words had a great depth and richness to him that I want to think about and explore my whole life. And I invite you to think about these simple words. Whenever I went to the bar, Grandma came with me. And so there's this deep sense in every one of us, whether we, whether our intimate partner, whether we have a husband or a wife or an intimate friendship or a partnership, all types of relationships, we desire to have that type of intimacy, to be known and to know someone in meaningful and deep ways. And it's interesting, right? Because we also experience the opposite. We experience rupture and pain, and we experience that relationships aren't always what we hope they would be. And so relationships have the ability to sink us or to help us to swim. And so the letter of Ephesians, after this amazing journey it's taken on, slows down at the very end to talk about the power of relationships. Not just the husband and wife, but all our friendships. Sons and daughters and aunts and cousins and friendships. And it gives us these strange words, these highly controversial words. So tonight, I want us all to breathe. And I want us to think through these hard words. And I want to see if something doesn't shimmer from us that can help us to really swim in our relationships. And so that first verse in 5:21 says, be subject to one another out of reverence for Christ. The KJV is even stronger. Submitting yourselves to one another in the fear of God, right? And you kind of have to breathe and you have to kind of take it in. You're like, whoa. Whoa, whoa, whoa. It's like baseball bat time in the Bible, right? It's strong language, right? The subjection, it feels like kingship, some cowering of a king. And these words have a sense of baggage to them because they've been used in really powerful and strong ways. And so I remember that as we let that the strength of those words sink into us, I remember that Stacy and I had to do something at a church that will remain nameless. And on this little whiteboard where this men's Bible study was meeting was, hold on, wait for it. Where did it go? Okay, don't worry, we'll get to it. We will get to it, okay. And so the baggage that this word has, people have used this passage to talk about a woman being a man's property, to be a woman being a doormat, a woman at the beck and call of a man, and lastly, this domination that happens, right? Be subject to one another. And so we want to name and own. There are verses in the Bible that get used for deep pain, and this is one of them. And so what we do when we come to verses in the Bible like this, we think through things very slowly, and we think through one, what do those words really mean? And we're going to look closely at what the word subject really means and what the word fear really means. Then we're going to look at the context before and after. And then lastly, we're going to look at Jesus' teaching, or we're going to look at other passages and how they shed light on more difficult passages. So this word, subject, it's the word hupotasso in the Greek. It comes from two roots, hupo and tasso. Hupo is underneath or below, and tasso means the way we structure things in our homes or in society. And so this word, so you have this before and after, and you have this sense of the passage is definitely saying, is definitely asking us to look at things from below. But we need more, right? There's not enough there. Because of the baggage of the Middle Ages, we think kings and kingdoms and subjection. And because of the baggage of culture, we have this different idea when we hear, be subject to one another, right? And so then we take another look at what came before. And we remember the passage in Ephesians 1:3-7, that incredible theological passage that tells us that we have a God who speaks well of us, that we have a God who adopts us and who cheers for us and who frees us and who trusts us and who challenges us and who empowers us. This is not a God who would ever ask someone to subject, to sort of cower in fear. The God of the Ephesians is a God of love. Remember the 22 times of agape love that the letter has shown us. Remember, it asked us to live wisely, just the passage before. And then the passage we'll talk about next month, it taught us to be on our guard at always and live diligently and live lives of love over and over again. And so this God is not a God that causes us to cower in fear or to subject ourselves. And then we look to the heart of the whole of the New Testament. And we look particularly at two passages. At Luke 6:36, where Jesus says, "Be compassionate, just as your Father is compassionate." There's a sense that this God is calling us to live compassionate lives. Lives that are lived from below, not top down on someone, right? And then the next one. "For the Son of Man came not to be served, but to serve, and to give his life as a ransom for many." So we have these two really cool things going on, this compassion and this service. And so this can help us to really think about what subject could mean. Hupotasso. So with all the baggage of this word subject, we could translate it better, compassionately serve. So compassionately serve one another out of reverence for Christ. But there's still that problem of the fear of Christ, right? This comes up 50 times in the New Testament. And again, that connotation of cowering fear of a God. But this fear is not like that. This, when you hear this fear, think of awe and wonder. Think of when you held that baby for the first time. Think of that Colorado sunset. Think of that first snow and all that awe and all that wonder. Think of Christmas time and tinsel and puppies and rainbows. Maybe not. So that sense of wonder. So we can translate this, compassionately serve one another out of wonder for Christ. And so the passage takes on a whole new acoustic, right? We can see this call to compassion in our relationships, this call to service, and then out of the sense of wonder for Christ. And it's fascinating because you just want to like circle that Christ, because this is the one who modeled for us the compassionate service. This is the one who gives us compassion day after day, who teaches us the way of service to one another. So our own compassionate service to one another is sort of propelled and motivated by the Christ who showed us compassion and service. And so what does it mean to compassionately serve? I think this word compassion, we would want to blow it up, but it means that every time you look or talk to someone, you try to think about their background and their history and who they are. You try to see the world through their eyes. And not only that, you take another step, because we know that we're all wired in very different ways. Some of us are feelers and some of us are more intuitive thinkers. And we try to approach every human being with that deep sense of compassion, with that incredible awareness that in front of you is another human being of infinite worth and that has wounds and heartaches just like you. And this is a person, usually in the context of this passage, who you are close to, a friend, a son, a daughter. So you extend to them this deep compassion. And then service. Service is the words and the actions that we use. So this is where we're calculated with what we say to one another. How we can help this person flourish just a little bit more, shimmer just a little more in their own life. How we can speak into their life, or how we can serve them in meaningful ways. So then this passage takes on a very incredible, beautiful, shimmering thing for us. Compassionately serve one another out of wonder for Christ. Our husbands, our wives, our partners, our kids, our aunts, our uncles, our grandparents. Compassionately serve. And so now we're going to move quickly through the rest of the passage, since we just finished one verse. And I'm going to show you how this beautiful refrain of compassionately serve works throughout this incredible passage. Except we have a really hard passage to look at, and we'll look at it in one second. So I want to remind you, anyone who has ever taught you that this subjection, that you are someone's property, that is not what God says. You are not a doormat. You are not at someone's beck and call. You are not dominated. You are someone of infinite worth made in the image of God. The idea here is this sense of mutual love in the Christian community. This sense of compassionate service that we all have for one another. So then comes the hardest one. Wives, be subject to your husbands as you are to the Lord. For the husband is the head of the wife, just as Christ is the head of the church, the body of which he is the Savior. Just as the church is subject to Christ, so also wives ought to be in everything to their husbands. And I walked into this church with Stacy one time, and this man had just finished his Bible study, and this was on the whiteboard. God, church, man, wife. Not even woman. I mean, it's bad enough, but not even woman. And so as I'm taking the picture with my iPhone, Stacy's like, that is not how it is in our home. And so it's fascinating, right? These two verses are very hard, very, very hard. Now, I want to explain what's happening here. So in the Greco-Roman world, there's what's called a household code. So all across the Greco-Roman world, there were these sort of wise ways to rule your household. And of course, in the Greco-Roman mindset, they thought that the head, that male meant more rational, which we know scientifically is not true anymore, right? And they thought that the church represented the female, who was more intuitive and sensitive. Again, not true. And so then they based this hierarchy based on sort of the common knowledge that's in the culture, right? But what's fascinating about this is I really believe that our early Christian forefathers and foremothers, as they're trying to work this out, remember they have verse 21, compassionately serve one another out of wonder for Christ. And then they smash this together. And there are some times when you have to go beyond the Bible to be faithful to the Bible. So you have to let the spirit of the Bible push you to new places. And this is one of those times. This is one of the times where the compassionate service, the mutual love we show one another, breaks down any hierarchies in the Christian family. This is powerful. So that mutual love based out of compassionate service becomes the rule of all of us. There is no hierarchies in Christian community, in Christian homes. It's about the mutual love that we share one another. So we move onward now knowing that, okay, they were doing their best to work with it, to smash it all together. And the spirit of it pushes us to say, yeah, that is not the model given what we know in the 21st century. And nor will it ever be the model again. And so we move on to the passage recognizing that now this verse takes on even more sort of urgency for us. Because every time it says man do this or woman do this, we're both called to do both of it. So it heightens the passage for us. And it says, husbands, remember we're adding, and wives, and everyone else, love your wives just as Christ loved the church and gave himself up for her in order to make her holy by cleansing her with the washing of the water by the word. And so this is a beautiful image. It's an image of baptism. And in the early church and in our churches, we baptize. And we baptize people to signify God's work on behalf of that child and our own commitment as a community to help that child to grow to the fullness of who he or she is supposed to be. And so in this verse, it asks us, one of our roles as compassionate service to one another is to help one another honor the baptism that we have. So we have the role every day in every relationship to help that person grow in virtue and in character and in honor and in strength. All those weaknesses and all those rough places, we're called to come alongside and help compassionately serve and help them become who they're created to be. He moves on to say, so as to present the church to himself in splendor without a spot or wrinkle or anything of the kind. That's a way of saying fully flourishing, character, virtue, love, your job. In your most intimate of friendships, is to help that other person to grow to all they were created to be. No small task. And it moves on. It says, in the same way, a husband should love their wives as they do their own bodies. He who loves his own wife loves himself. For no one ever hates his own body. And it moves on and on. For this reason, no man will leave. And they're quoting from Genesis, right? Making clear the sacredness of marriage. Marriage is not just about procreation, but about human flourishing for all. And then it comes to my favorite line. So in case you're reading all this and I'm really trying my hardest, they say, this is a great mystery. And so it's kind of like, I'm trying my real hardest here. This is a great mystery. And we all understand that mystery, the mystery of loving another person, the mystery of our lives compassionately serving someone else. Then the passage moves on to this children, honoring all the people in the household. And so children, obey your parents in the Lord. Again, we have that sense of cower, right? But this word obey can be thought of in exactly the same way. this sense of children have compassionate service to your parents. So what if, instead of teaching your kids to cower and fear you, you taught them to serve one another? You taught your household to compassionately serve. You had a competition on who could serve each other more in your household. That's the idea here, to let this idea of compassionate service transform our households. Honor your father and mother. This is the first commandment with the promise, so that it may be well with you and you may live a long life on earth. And then it says, fathers, and we add mothers and everyone else who has responsibility with children, do not provoke your children to anger, but bring them up in the discipline and instruction of the Lord. Reminder, compassionately serve your kids. Look in their eyes and meet them at whatever developmental level they're in and help them to grow in this journey of life. And then, of course, slaves, obey your earthly masters with fear and trembling. Once again, right? In singleness of heart as you obey Christ. Not only while being watched and in order to please them, but as slaves of Christ, doing the will of God from the heart. Render service with enthusiasm as to the Lord and not to men and women. Knowing that whatever good we do, we will receive the same again from the Lord, whether we are slaves or free. So once again, slaves, or we would say workers, compassionately serve your bosses so well. Compassionately serve your coworkers so well that they are like, what is wrong with that person, right? And learn that amazingness of seeing where that person is coming from and showing them the compassion that God shows all of us. And then, of course, and the masters, do the same to them. Stop threatening them, for you know that both of you have the same master in heaven, and with him there is no partiality. And masters, or managers, or bosses, show your workers that compassionate service that Christ calls us all to. And so that verse, compassionately serve one another, out of wonder for Christ. And this biblical scholar, Phoebe Perkins, says, this is the voluntary submission of mutual Christian love. And so when my grandpa told me, whenever I went to the bars, my grandma came with me. I don't know exactly what he meant. I think he means a lot in that small saying, but I know what I saw. I know that this man, after 40 years of marriage, learned to compassionately serve my grandma. I know that he learned to care for her in her last days. I know that his heart broke when she parted. And so he learned the secret of mutual Christian love in a household, in a family that could transform things. And I think there's something really powerful in thinking that all of us, when we seek out on this road to compassionately serve someone, it's like, but this is hard, Dale. This people are tough, Dale. Like, I'd rather love my dog, right? It's easier. And that finally dawned on me why people love dogs so much. They're so much darn easier than people. But this idea of when we think we can't do it, when it's tough, when we lose our temper, this is what's so beautiful about the verse. We do it out of wonder for Christ. Christ is the one, day after day, who shows us compassion, who has shown us the greatest compassion of all, who meets us right where we're at and sees through us, who created us in all our being, and then serves us. And every day, and every week in the church, we actually break the bread as a symbol of the compassion of God for everyone. And we share the cup as a symbol of a new covenant that God will always be there for us and with us to help us to compassionately serve others as we receive the compassionate service of our God.